David Lloyd, and I am an alcoholic. I want to thank each and every one of you for being here to help me live a life of my beyond my wildest dreams. And I really want to thank people who are here to support me. It means a lot to me to know that people will come to a place like this and listen to what I have to say, because before, nobody would listen to anything I had to say. So you're either sicker than I am, or we'll find out. Anyway, the day my life changed was February 20th of 1994. That's the day my life started changing. That's the day I came into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and started working the program instead of the people in the program. I was in the program earlier than that. I'd like to say that I went out, but you'd have to come in to go out. So I never did that. So, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was angry. I pretty much hated everything, you, me, life in general, and I couldn't figure out why, and I never could figure out why my whole life. I was angry from the time I was a little kid that I can remember. I will let you know that I qualify before I even took a drink. I can remember that around 7 years old, I was so angry one day, and I have no idea why, but when I was angry at a kid, I always liked to take things out on things. So I found a metal pipe, and I picked up that pipe, and I had a basketball in my hand, and I hit that basketball, and that pipe came back and hit me right square in the head. Most people would have stopped. I did it two more times. That's the God honest truth, and that's the way my drinking career went. You know, I just kept doing things one after another, you know, and never learned after the first one. I'm going to share a portion of my life. At a young age, I'm going to try to do this without any emotion, because I don't like to show that now. Between 7 and 18 years old, my life was miserable. A lot of things happened in my life that I had no control over. There was a lot of things, and this is for the newcomers. I'm going to be sharing a few things that I thought I was going to go to the grave with. I shared them with my sponsor. And, you know, lo and behold, I didn't do anything. I was kind of like a victim. And, you know, the whole time of my life, I carried those things with me. And I thought that I was doing something wrong. And I'm gonna share that with you, because I think it's important for the newcomer to know that when you do your four step and when you do your steps, do them as diligently as you can, because do them as if your life depends on it, because mine did. You know, I had to figure out why I was so angry, even when I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I worked my four-step, and to this day, I still searched for the reasons of why I am so... I'm not angry anymore today, but not today, maybe yesterday. But I don't carry the anger that I used to. I don't do that. Let me start this way. When I was born, my dad came into the hospital, and he checked to see if I was a boy or a girl, and he left. And he left my wife. He left my wife and my wife, my mother, in the hospital. He left my mother in the hospital. He left my sister, my two brothers, and myself, and for us to defend for ourselves. And I come to hate that man with a passion. Had no clue of why he left. I always thought it was because I was born. I always thought that, well, maybe he wouldn't have left if I wouldn't have been born. The other thing is when I was born, I was a twin. But my brother was a stillborn. And they always told me that the stronger one took everything. So I always felt guilty, like I had something to do with my brother's death. which I had no, I didn't have anything to do with that. But I carried those things with me. I carried them through my younger years, and I remember this. I always thought to myself, you know, what if I would have been the one that died and my brother stayed, you know, lived, and would my dad stayed? Would he have taken care of my parents? Would he have taken care of my brothers and my sisters? You know, I always carried this stuff, and I dealt with that for quite some time, and around 8 years old, this all happened all at the same time, actually. We went to Catholic Church, and I'm not here to knock any church whatsoever, because I can't hardly remember what I learned in Catholic Church. All I can remember is I had a punishing God. That's all I could remember. When I came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's two things that I hated, and I had to find out why, and that was God and men. Those are the two things that I hated with a passion. All I knew is if I had a punishing God, I didn't have a chance in hell from all the things that I thought I did. You know, so, you know, what did it matter whether I was good or bad or indifferent? You know, I didn't have a chance anyway. So, as we were pretty poor. We weren't pretty poor. We were pretty poor. But we used to, my sister was engaged. My sister was engaged. She was in high school, and she was a senior. And we used to have to go to her husband's fiance's house for Thanksgiving dinners, Christmas dinners, those type of dinners. And, you know, when I first went there, this started when I was about 7 and went to about 9 when I stopped going because I refused. But nowadays, kids know what to do if an adult says, talks, does something to you. I shouldn't say this. At my age back then, your parents didn't talk to you about that type of stuff. But when we would go to dinners and stuff over there, they had this next door neighbor who was pretty whacked out, and you know, I don't think he was all there or anything, but he started doing, whenever I went to the bathroom, he would stand outside after I went to the bathroom, and he'd trap me in the bathroom and he'd make me watch him play with himself. And you know, that's one of the things that I was going to take to my grave. You know, I thought that I had something to do with that. I didn't have anything to do with that, but I didn't know that. And I didn't, even as an adult, I didn't know that until my sponsor said, you know what? That has nothing to do with you. You know, and it took somebody to explain this to me. I'm a little slow sometimes. But this happened between I was time 7 and 9 years old, and at about the same time, I realized that if I wanted anything in my entire life, I was going to have to work for it. So I went out and I got a newspaper route, and the typical alcoholic, I didn't get one, I got two. And I started doing these newspapers, and the guy who delivered the newspapers liked how well I was doing the newspapers. He asked me if I would help him deliver the newspapers to the kids. So I got rid of one of my newspaper routes and I started working with this guy. His name was Neil. There was three other guys that hung around his house also, and they rode motorcycles and stuff. And this is how I got involved with him and the men that were over there. Is we'd always be riding motorcycles and stuff, and one day we were sitting there, and I was about 8 years old, almost 9, and they were sitting around, and two of them were older. Neil was much older, and they asked me, "Would you like a beer?" And You know, I never asked why or what it was. I said, sure. And I drank that beer, and I can tell you what kind it was. It's Ham's beer. Ugh. And I drank until I got sick, you know, and that there should have showed me what I was. But from that moment on, everything changed. When I drank, I didn't care about anything else. You know, my life would change every time I drank. You know, some people say that they drank because it made them better dancers, better looking, better, you know. I just drank because it made me feel so I didn't feel. And that was my problem. I was okay as long as I wasn't feeling. And, you know, I did this for quite some time. Meanwhile, I started drinking about 8 years old with these guys, and I continued on. And about 9 years old, my mom started getting sick. And about this time, I really, really, really started hating God. You know, I just figured, you know, what's the sense? If there was really a God in my life, would he be doing this? So I just, from that moment on, I just said, hell with it. And I started drinking as heavily and as much as I possibly could, even at a very young age. You know, that was my routine. And we did this gentleman named Neil, he would buy me motorcycles, and I'd work and I'd pay him back. And I had three motorcycles by the time I was 11 years old, and I would race them and stuff. And it, you know, I drank, never did any drugs, never did any of that. And I just want to warn you that some point in time you're going to hear that word, that D word. And so if you've got time and you don't like hearing that thing, you should get a piece of paper. You might have to write about it. but you know, I'm not going to talk about my drug addiction. I'm going to tell you about my alcoholism, but it had something to do with it. So I never did any of that stuff. I just drank, and I drank, and I drank, and I drank, and we, as I was growing up, my mom started getting sicker, and about 11 or 12, she was getting really sick, and we knew at some point in time, because she kept telling me that she's going to die eventually, and I was devastated, because it was the only thing in my entire life that anybody really cared about me was my mother. And because anybody I met, anybody I hung around, treated me like I was less than, you know, which I felt like I was less than. So I probably brought it on a lot of myself. But I carried that. And so through my teens, all I did was drink. And I went to high school, and I played football, and I ran track, and I did all these things, and I did it most of the time drunk. And I did them very well, actually. Have you ever seen a pole vaulter drunk? I was quite good at it, too, so believe it or not. So anyway, as my teen years started going on, these guys that hung around Neil also were getting older, and they were leaving and stuff like that. And Neil was, through my teens, he did everything for me, just like a dad would do for you, you know. And he let me drive his van. He taught me how to drive. He did a lot of things a father would do for you. So I started feeling okay about a man being in my life. And at 16 years old, my mother died. I didn't know what to do or where to go. My brothers and my sisters were all married and moved out and gone and stuff. And I was 16 years old. So I went to Neil one day. Well, actually, right after we buried my mother, I went to Neil and I asked this, you know, I went to him and I said, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said, well, don't worry about it. He said, you take care of me and I'll take care of you. And I didn't know what he meant when he said that. And I asked him, I said, what are you talking about? And he pulled his pants down and he said, you take care of me and I'll take care of you. Now, this is a man who never, ever, once in 8, 9 years, ever even attempted anything like that. I was devastated. I left that house that day, and from that point on in my life at 16 years old, I said, screw it. I'm going to drink, and I'm going to drug, and do everything I possibly can to die. Because at that point in time, I really didn't care if I lived or died. And that's exactly what I did. You know, from that point on, I did finish high school. I went through high school. I partied, went to high school, and worked. And those are the three things I did to get through high school. And I'm telling you that I got through high school any way I possibly could. My senior year, I had 7 PE classes. I did what I had to do, you know. And that was only because my football coach and my track coach were all the PE coaches, so I didn't even have to go. So I stayed pretty much drunk, and I worked, and I partied through my years. And I tell you, what started happening was somebody asked me if I wanted a marijuana joint. And I said, sure. Like I did everything. And I smoked that thing, and I went to sleep. And that was the last time I'd smoked marijuana. I didn't. Why does anybody want something to go to sleep? I couldn't figure that out. And then somebody offered me these white, what they're called, cross tops. And I fell in love. I mean, I could drink for days. And that's all I cared about was drinking, and I could drink for days. And this is the type of person I was. When they asked me you want something, I just said, sure. I didn't ask what it did or how it did it. So I'm going to tell you one little thing about how I drank and how I drugged, and the rest of it I'm not going to go into, because it really is, it doesn't matter how much I drugged, how much I drank, how much I did anything. I was an alcoholic, and I knew that from an early, early age. But my senior year, my prom, no, it was grad night, I'm sorry. It was at Disneyland. And when you get on the bus, they search you. So I was making a plan prior to getting on a bus. And I was asking my friend, I said, what can I take before I get on a bus that I won't come on to until we get to Disneyland? So he said, have you ever tried mushrooms? I said, no. And he said, well, let me get you some and I'll walk you through it. And I said, okay. So this guy went and got me an ounce of mushrooms. And he said, listen, he said, while you're drinking your beer before you get on the bus, he said, take a half of this. He said, take half of this, and in an hour and 15 minutes or so, hour 20, you'll start coming on to it. You should be at Disneyland by then. Good alcoholic I was, I said, well, shit, if half of it was good, all of it would be perfect. So I did the whole ounce. I probably had them still in my teeth when I walked onto the bus. But I had drank a 12-pack of beer, and I did this. And I got onto a bus, and I got news for you. It takes an hour and 45 minutes to get to Disneyland. And at an hour and 15 minutes, boy, did things change. But it was a fun time at Disneyland. I put a whole new meaning on Space Mountain. But that was one of the things, and those are the things, the type of things that I used to do. You know, from that point on, and I'm not going to go deep into it. From that point on, I was out of control. I was absolutely out of control. And it didn't matter who you were, how you were, or what it was. I didn't care as long as you didn't get in the way of my drinking. That's the way it was. And, you know, I had a lot of girlfriends, and I have a couple of ex-wives. And, you know, I always thought, how could so many women be so wrong about one person? Couldn't figure it out, you know? But from that point on, I just drank, and I drank, and I drank, and I drank, and I did everything I possibly could. And about 4 years after I graduated, I ran into a girl that I went to school with, and I'd like to say I fell in love, but that wasn't the case. We got married, and it was a very short marriage. She already had two kids. I had no clue of how to be a father or a dad or anything else. I was really into my addiction heavily, along with other ones. That was a bad thing from the beginning, let me tell you. It was a horrible marriage. When it ended, my life was threatened. It was an ugly divorce. But that's the way I did everything, ugly. So after that happened, I was on my own again. And I started even heavier. And at this point in time, now I'm starting to get into the fact that it's not working anymore for me. It used to be fun. I used to have a lot of fun doing that, but it stopped working. And at this point in time, now I'm starting to put guns to my head because I just wanted it to stop. I didn't want to continue doing the things that I was doing, but I didn't know how to stop it. So I had put a gun to my head. And obviously didn't pull the trigger. I don't care what it looks like, but I didn't pull the trigger. So I just continued. I figured, you know, I'll just do it until I die. And so I started drinking heavily and doing a whole lot of drugs. I got a brilliant idea that if I became selling them, that I could do a lot more, except I became my only customer. So that didn't work out very well. So I just kept doing the things that I did until I met, the mother of my daughter. I met this lady. There's a gentleman in this room who is the only man that I know in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous has ever seen me drink and drug. Because I used to do it with him. And we used to go to the desert a lot. And I met my mother of my daughters at the desert. And I fell madly in love. Or I should say she did. So I remember somebody asking her, "Why are you with him?" And she said, "I'm going to change him." Good luck with that one. But, you know, I continued doing what I was doing. And her mother came up with a brilliant idea. "Why don't you marry her?" And I said, "Sure." I guess that was the only answer I knew was sure. So I said, "Okay." So I married her. You know, things never changed with me. I just kept drugging and drinking and doing the things that I do. And she wanted to have a child. And I said, okay. So I was at least bright enough to stop doing the drugs for 3 months. so that we could have a child that wasn't addicted like her father. And so we did that, and we had a baby girl. We had a little girl, and she is my God. She is so precious. To this day, she's still precious. And we had her in, and at this point in time, I was out of control. I was out of control, and I had already put a gun to my head twice, and her mother was having a real tough time with me, and my daughter being new and everything. And so one night, my wife had left, and she was going to go do something. I don't remember what it was, and I'm glad my daughter isn't here to hear this, because my daughter knows everything about me that she needs to know. She knows everything about the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I came in the room, she sat on my lap for almost, a lot of years. And you people taught her that she didn't have to do what I did. And she was about 1.5 years old. And at this point in time, where in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 152, 153, it says a man becomes to know loneliness like no other man knows. And he comes to a jumping off point. And that's where I came. I came to a jumping off point and a loneliness 3.5 years before I got sober. Actually 4 years. I was laying there with my daughter, and I was getting ready to put her to bed. And I had my .38 on the counter because I was going to blow my head off after I put her to sleep. And that was my plan. I put her to sleep, and I started thinking to myself that, you know, that probably wouldn't be a really good idea, because I didn't know when her mother was coming home. And it had been quite a mess to take care of after. So I decided not to do that. But, you know, for another 4 years, I drank and drugged hard. And the whole time, see, I hear a lot of people talk about that that they're blackout drinkers. Well, I'm not a blackout drinker. I remember every single stinking thing that I've ever done from the minute I've done it. Every time I went out and did something, I remembered it. You know, I put my daughter's life in jeopardy so many times it was unbelievable. I would drink and drive constantly. I would have her in the car when I went to go get drugs. I carried a weapon everywhere I went. My big saying was that my .38 was like my American Express card. I never left home without it. And you know, that was some of the stupidest things that I've ever... Here's the person who is supposed to protect her and guide her and was putting her life in jeopardy every single day. And I didn't care, because alcohol and drugs were the only thing that I thought about. I didn't think once, you know, this isn't really really good idea, Lloyd. You know, all I was concerned about was taking care of Lloyd. And that's the way it was. And about 3.5 years, of doing this, she said that, Lloyd, you need to go get help. And I asked her, where am I supposed to get help at? She goes, try Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's why I said I didn't ever go out, because I never came in, but I came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and being a great alcoholic that I am, I read the thing up there, and it said the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Didn't say shit about drugs, so I'm in there. So I did drugs for 11 months. That's how good I was. But then it finally came to an end. It finally came to an end. I I came home. See, my problem wasn't that I drank every minute of the day. My problem is when I drank, I didn't know how long I was going to go for. You know, it could be a day, could be 7, could be 10. I never knew. So, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I played everybody and I did everything. And then I came home one day, and this is how alert that I was. In our hallway was a gun rack, and that gun rack was full of guns. I walked into my house, never knowing that my wife wasn't there and my daughter wasn't there. I walked down the hall, went to my bedroom, and I turned around, and I walked back, and I looked at my gun cabinet, and it was empty. And I thought, wow, that's strange. So I went into the bedroom, and on the bed was a Dear Lloyd letter. And it said she had taken my daughter, and that she was not coming back until I got help. And for the first time in my entire life, did anything matter to me? Did anything matter to me? All of a sudden, something hit me. That I grew up just like my dad that I hated all my life. I grew up just like him. The great alcoholic that he was, I grew up just like him. And I thought to myself, what do I do now? And just to let you know, so because everybody asked me afterwards, I did get my guns back. They were gone. She called the sheriff's department, had them come and get all my guns because she knew I was homicidal and suicidal. And she didn't want me blowing my head off while she left, so she went and had them. But I got them back 2 weeks later because they say they want a cooling off period, but I think they told me. Couldn't understand that either. But, so the only thought that I had was, well, I do call this guy a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe I should call him. So I did. I called Steve, and Steve was at my house probably about 20 minutes later, and he sat there and he talked to me for about 3.5 hours of Alcoholics Anonymous, how I get sober. And I said, you know, what do I do? And he says, the first thing he says, Lloyd, you need to find a God of your own that's sending power greater than yourself, or you're going to die. And I didn't know how to do that because I hated God. So I asked him, how do you do that? And he said, get on your knees and pray to a God that you don't like, you don't want, you don't need. Just pray to him and ask him for help. And that's what I did. From that night on, I have been sober. I've never touched a drink or a drop or a drug. You know, hold on a minute. Now I'm back. You know, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm here to tell you this part for the newcomers, because, you know, nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous does it say you get sober and everything's perfect. What it will do is help you work through life situations, which my sponsor told me, you know, two things are going to happen, Lloyd. Your life is going to change and life's going to be the same. And it's been exactly that. My life started changing. The first 6 months of my sobriety, I lost my house, the 2 cars, everything that we owned. Never lost that while I was drinking and drugging. I did pretty good with robbing Peter and paying Paul. But it finally hit me and come to a spot to where, you know, I had to give up everything. And then I lost that with the mother and my daughter. Lost a home. I worked hard for the next 6 years of sobriety to buy them a house and a car and everything back that I lost. And I did that. And about 6 months after that, me and her got divorced. So I lost that house again and the car. And I was so full of rage and anger at 6.5 years sobriety. A friend of mine suggested that maybe I ought to put my guns in a safe. That's how angry I was at 6.5 years of sobriety. I'm telling you this because this is how it was for me. It wasn't always peaches and cream for me when I got sober. But what I did do is I didn't drink in between. You know, the one thing that this gentleman taught me was that, Lloyd, you're an alcoholic, and that is not ever going to change. And that's what I go through life with every single day, no matter what happens. I don't ever think, well, maybe a drink will take care of it, because a drink's not going to take care of it. I am an alcoholic, and I will be for the rest of my life. After we lost that, I moved. This is something I'm going to suggest that you don't do. I moved in with a sponsor. Oh, God, was that a nightmare. But you know what? I thank God that I did, because he walked me through a lot of things. He walked me through a lot of things. And then I met my wife, who's here tonight, that knows everything about alcoholism, knows everything about me. She supports everything I do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. She is not one of us. I don't say that she's normal. She's not one of us. Okay? I'll pay for that later. She abuses alcohol, because we'll go and get pizza and she'll order a beer. And leave half of it there. You know, and that's abuse if you ask me. But, you know, this woman, this is the only lady that I know that ever wanted me to come home 97% of the time. You know, it's pretty good for an alcoholic, 97, you know. But, no, she actually loves me for who I am today. I try to be the best man that I can. I'm not always perfect. Don't tell her that. You know, we started going together for quite some time, and then we split up for a year, and my sponsor suggested something to me. He says, Lloyd, you know what? You ought to move in by yourself and learn how to live with yourself. That was the best thing I ever did in my entire life. I was always needy, always had to have somebody around me, I had to live in this studio that was probably no bigger than this box right here for a year, and the only person I had to talk to was Lloyd, unless I went to a meeting or anything. And I learned a lot about me, you know, and that's where my sobriety started changing, because I started searching why I was so angry, why I hated men, why I hated God, and these things that I told you about, I started searching out and finding out why I did those things. I've worked as hard as I possibly can to find out why I was so angry and why I carried the things that I did. You know, I hated a man that I absolutely did not know, and that was my father. He was an alcoholic. He went to prison for 6 years because they couldn't keep him from driving. He was a true alcoholic. He did the best that he could with what he had. I didn't know that, because I didn't know what an alcoholic was. All I thought was an alcoholic was a person who drank a lot. I didn't know it was one that causes havoc all the way through his drinking. You know, destroying lives, taking advantage of people. I didn't know that's what all these things. I just thought it was a man who drank a lot. I do things quickly and slowly. About my second year of sobriety, I wrote a letter to my mother, and I wrote a letter to my father. And I went to my mom's grave, and I read the letter to her at the beginning. And at 13 years of sobriety, I looked at my wife, and I said, you know what, I need to make an amends. And she said, what amends is that? And I said, that's my father. And I had to look up to see where he was buried, and he was buried in Utah. So we got to have a vacation along with going to find my father. And we looked and we hunted and we found my father's grave, and I stayed there and I read that letter that I wrote 13 years prior to, and I read it to him, you know. And this was something that I had to do for me, for my sobriety. It wasn't something that I was going to drink over. This is something that I had to do. Because I had to make my amends to him. doing so, I'll tell you a funny thing real quick before I start ending this. My wife and I were sitting there and we were having dinner. And she was asking me about the men. She doesn't remember this. I remember this plain as day. We were sitting there and she asked, why do you guys make them? How do you, do you wait until people die to make the amends or what? And I said, no, it's just a lot easier that way. They don't talk back. So, you know, it was something that I had to do. And, you know, I married her. Hold on. It'll be 8 years, April 28th of this year. And, you know, it was the best thing that I ever done. My daughter, who at 5 years old, I was looking across the table telling her I was an alcoholic and a drug addict, is 24 years old today. She and I have a relationship like there's no tomorrow. We are very, very, very close. You people, this is what you people have given me. My wife and I live straight across the street from my daughter and her husband. And every single day I get to go over there and I get to see this young lady and her husband with my grandkids. And the love that they give these two kids, I only wish I could have given her. The love she gives these two kids, I only wish that I could have gotten. I watch these two every single day, how they work together, how they play with their kids, how they love their kids. You people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous have done this for me. Finally, somewhere in my chain, because if you go all the way back, we're all alcoholics, and somewhere, finally, we've gotten to cut the chain. My daughter has never had to do what I do. You know, that I am so grateful for. I am so grateful that you people have taught me how to become a father, how to become a husband, how to become a friend. My brother died April 14th, 2006. My brother was my hero. You people walked me through that. You know, I have never had to take a drink. I'm telling you this because I want the newcomers to know that there is hope. You don't have to drink over a simple thing. If the lawnmower don't start, go get a new one. Rent one, borrow one, but don't drink over it. You know, I'm going to end this with this. And I heard this from another speaker. And I thought it was the greatest thing that I ever heard. Is I asked you today what your dash is. And for those of you who don't know what the dash is, on your gravestone is the day you were born and the day you die. And in between there is the dash. Now, my dash before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous would have been, well, he wasn't much of a husband. He wasn't much of a father. All he liked to do was drink. He was a drug addict to boot. Those are the kind of things my dash would have been. Today, my dash is, he has helped a lot of people. He's loving. He's kind. He's a hell of a father today. He's a great husband. I don't know about that. Well that's up. But he's a great brother. He tries to do the best that he can. That is my dash today. My dash has changed so much. All because of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you people in it. And have taught me how to do all these things. Because when I walked in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no clue how to be any of those things. Thank you.